If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. U.S. consumer sentiment dropped in October to its lowest level since the end of last year as consumers worried congressional dysfunction and the resulting partial federal government shutdown would hurt growth. That, according to a survey released on Friday. The Thomson Reuters, University of Michigan, final reading on the overall index on consumer sentiment fell to 73.2 in October, down from 77.5 in September. That was the lowest final reading since December 2012. The October figure was also lower than both the 75 forecast by economists in a Reuters poll and the mid-month preliminary reading of 75.2. The federal government shut down for 16 days in the first half of October as congressional Republicans sought to undermine President Barack Obama's signature health care law as a condition of funding the government. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Hi, I'm Kathy Hinners, your host on Daily Roll Call on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Thank you for tuning in and welcome to the show. Now, if I may, I'd like to take a moment and tell you a little bit
if
about...
If you love America, you're among friends
and,
here.
Who I am and how I got to this point. I'm a retired police officer from Albany, New York, where I served the majority of my 20 years. Towards the end of my career, I started to see a change in the culture of the city. There was mosques, Islamic schools, women with hijabs, people praying in parks, and then there were several businesses opening and being run by members of this community. It wasn't easy to get to know some of the people in these businesses, but over time I was able to cultivate those that would give me information, and that is exactly what happened. And to this day, I still have those informants, if you will, or people that give me the information. I was kind of shocked at how things were changing in this city and why. So after I retired, I was hired by a company to develop and instruct a three-day course on Middle Easterner Muslim issues to law enforcement. Since then, I have instructed thousands of officers across the country. And what shocks me, I guess, is the number of law enforcement agencies that have no idea what is happening within their communities. It's very frustrating. So basically, that is how I got to where I am. Now, since this is our first show, I'd like to tell you what's in store for you in upcoming shows. As the retired police officer and spending time in the Middle Eastern community, I've seen a need for not only my fellow law enforcement, but the American public to understand why this growing trend is occurring. The Muslim Brotherhood and several of its front organizations are right here in the United States. Their arms reach across our education system, our government, our law enforcement, military, and, of course, all of our communities. Groups such as the Muslim Student Association, which are in the hundreds within colleges and universities across our country. But now they're even starting to expand in high schools, and this is something further down the road we will talk about because it is in the high schools. Another group would be called CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. They are in 35 of our states and are demanding accommodations, or they will simply sue you. And CARE has a grip, unfortunately, in a lot of law enforcement agencies and within our education system. Once you understand how they have become entrenched, everything we're going to talk about in the next several weeks will come together in many of the topics that we're going to discuss. Now, let me give you a brief overview of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood was founded in Egypt in 1928 by a man by the name of Hassan al-Banna. 1968, the Muslim Student Union, which is now called the Muslim Student Association, was founded in Urbana, Illinois. So you see, they have been here since the 60s. They have taken a hold of our society really since the 60s. Colleges were the principal target because they thought it was an ideal environment for what is called dawah, or the proselytizing of Islam. Now, over the period of time in our show, I will be telling you different terms, and I will always tell you what they mean, because you need to understand these types of terms, and dawah is one of those. Now, dawah is the proselytizing of Islam. Today, it is one of the largest organizations. The Muslim Student Association is one of the largest organizations within the Ikhwan, which is also the Brotherhood. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood's goal is threefold. They wish to have one law, which would be the Sharia, one government, and one religion. Okay, this is called a global caliphate. Now, in order to have a global caliphate, you have to have what's considered to be a pure Muslim state. They believe that non-Muslims must be reverted back to a pure Islamic state. I said reverted because they believe everyone was born a Muslim, but throughout their lives became an apostate and moved to other religions. The goal is to have all mankind revert back to Islam. Now, that is a basic overview, and it seems like a huge undertaking, if you will, by a group. But as we go along, as we progress, you will understand the mindset and the ideology. So keep that in mind. And again, as in future shows, we're going to be discussing the Sharia law and financing. There is Sharia financing in most of our banks that we do business with today. How our schools are taking your children on field trips to mosques, and then not just for law enforcement, but what to look for when you go in some of the stores, whether it's a small dollar store or a gas station, a tobacco store, wherever a member of this community is running the business or owns the business, we're going to talk about some of the things to look for because there are red flags all over the place. And when I say there are red flags all over the place, those may be businesses that are collecting money and transporting it to Hamas or Hezbollah. So those are some things that you need to be aware of. And if you stay tuned, you're going to learn what is happening in your own backyard. So on that note, on tonight's show, we are discussing an issue that is currently unfolding, not just here in Tennessee, but across the country as well, and that is the adoption of textbooks. We are going to have Dr. Bill Warner, who has critiqued some of these textbooks that are used throughout the country and the state. He will be telling us what he found, what his findings were, and how he came to those findings. And then in our second hour, we are going to speak to Lisa Moore, who is a textbook warrior, and find out what the State Commission has done and what the next move is. Now, conservativenationmedia.com starts off the work week every Monday in a big way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the volunteer state, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans insight and the most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday. So make sure to check them out. Brought to you by the Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Okay, coming up in a few minutes is Dr. Bill Warner, who is an expert on political Islam. Dr. Bill has written several books on Islam, including Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, The Political Traditions of Muhammad, an abridged version of the Quran, and many more. His website is politicalislam.com. is a great site to go for beginners. I would recommend that to everyone. Dr. Bill holds a PhD in physics and math topics that are so far away from his mission. It's incredible. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Dr. Bill Warner.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Hey, there he is. How's it going?
I'm having a stroke.
Are you going to shake my hand or what?
I'm having a stroke.
Wow, you're not even moving your arm.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you okay?
I'm having a stroke.
Your face looks weird, too.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you having a seizure or something?
I'm having a stroke.
When someone is having a stroke, they may not be able to say it with words, but their body language will tell you loud and clear.
I'm having a stroke.
You just need to know the sudden signs. Look for FAST, F-A-S-T. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. Or S, speech difficulty. Then T, time. Time to call 911 immediately. Because the sooner they get to the hospital, the sooner they'll get treatment. And that can make a remarkable difference in their recovery. Know the sudden signs. Face, arm, speech, time. Spot a stroke fast. Visit strokeassociation.org. Brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Daily Roll Call. I'm your host, Dee Hinners, on conservativenationmedia.com. Our number to call in is 718-305-7176. And I hope I have Dr. Bill Warner on the phone with me. Are you there, Dr. Bill?
I am here.
Excellent. Thank you. I didn't mean to hang up on you earlier. I appreciate you being on my first show. I must tell everyone that I have learned so much from working with you and speaking with you, and hopefully I'm sure our audience will glean that information as well. I brought you on because the last few months, actually, we seem to have been in a battle with a state commission as well as school boards throughout the state regarding some textbooks. And I understand that you critiqued some of the textbooks. What did you find? What's the problem?
Well, let's start. What we find is briefly this. Kathy, one time I gave expert testimony in court, and I was asked to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Now, it's that first part we need to why do they want you to tell the whole truth? Because a half-truth is very frequently a lie. And it is the half-truth that we find about Islam in these textbooks. I have reviewed about roughly a half a dozen textbooks for social studies or what they call human geography, and they all share the half-truth problem. It's not that they tell any, well, I won't say any. There are some outright lies. But in most of the case, what they tell you about is what I'll call the good stuff about Islam. Now, we need to stop here and see that Islam has two faces, and only the pleasant face is the one that is given us. I've talked a lot about Islam, and I find that one of the best ways to summarize it is with Muhammad's career. He started out in his mid-40s as a preacher about a new religion called Islam. Now, he preached the religion of Islam for 13 years in Mecca and garnered about 150 followers. That is, he persuaded about 150 people to become Muslim. That's about 10 a year.
Not
now, if that's all he had done, you and I would not be talking now. Because let me say, I have no problem with the religion of Islam. I think it's got a peculiar heaven and an outrageously funny hell, but that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not concerned about the religion of Islam in any way, shape, form, or fashion. The problem is this. When Muhammad went to Medina, and by the way, it was the Meccans who insisted that he leave, he was a troublesome neighbor to have. He always was in your face, pushing Islam, always arguing, and creating dissension. And that's the reason the Meccan says, leave town. You cause nothing but dissension, pain, and suffering. When he went to Medina, Muhammad became a different man. He became a shrewd politician. He may have been mediocre as a preacher, but as a politician, he was world class. He invented a new political form of thought called jihad. Now, what happened is that all of a sudden, if you did not agree with Muhammad, he had a big stick. Actually, he had something better than a big stick. He had a sword, and even better than a sword, he had a whole lot of other people who would use swords. And so what happened was he began a military attack on the city of Mecca, and the way he launched this attack was on their caravans, their trading caravans. Okay, the story ends like this. He averaged an event of violence on the average of every 6 weeks for the last 9 years of his life.
Oh, wow.
That is a lot of jihad. That is a lot of violence. Here's the deal. On averaging this event of jihad every 6 weeks for the last 9 years of his life, he became an outrageous success, the first ruler of all of Arabia, and when he died, every Arab was a Muslim. I told you.
Well,
there are two different Muhammads. The first one, a religious man, was a failure. The jihadist businessman, jihadist and politician, was an overwhelming, outrageous success. Now, here's the deal.
No wonder.
Here's the deal. We never learn about Muhammad in Medina. We never learn about Muhammad the jihadist. We never learn about the time that they took a woman and tore her apart with four camels. That's not in the textbooks. We don't see how 800 Jewish males are killed in one day in the marketplace of Medina. Nor do we hear Muhammad issuing the rules on how to rape female captives in our textbooks. Now, these things are all clearly laid out in his biography called the Sirah and his traditions called the Hadith. These are not secrets, I'm telling you. These can be read by anybody who's going to use it. Oh, that's my point. You would think that Muhammad was nothing but a religious preacher and that everybody loved the guy. That's what our textbooks tell us. Our textbooks tell us one half of the truth, the nice Muhammad truth. And that's their problem, briefly in a nutshell.
And that is the problem, because we are not being told the true nature of Muhammad and Islam. I mean, I don't believe they talk in the textbooks, and correct me if I'm wrong, about the Surah or the Hadith. Are they even mentioned in these textbooks?
They actually do mention the Hadith. I was stunned about that. But you have to understand, now let me get this. If there are two Muhammads, then there are two kinds of Hadith. See, here's the key. There's two of everything in the Quran, in Muhammad's life, and in his traditions. You've always got a good Muhammad and a bad Muhammad, a good Quran and a bad Quran. Bad here means people like me get harmed. I call that bad, just a
yes.
point of view. And I might add people like you, or probably a listener.
Thank you.
I don't know. Our problem is that we don't get the whole truth.
Right.
And I'll bet you, if you're in your time, I'll bet you have met criminals who would gladly tell you half the truth.
Oh, gosh, not even half the truth. If I was lucky, I'd get one with half the truth. they're not well known for that, Dr. Bell. I find it amazing that the textbooks are taking the tone of the radical point of view for such a peaceful religion. It's amazing to me, I guess it's not amazing to me, but I guess it is, that we're not even paying attention to this. I mean, is this a form of indoctrination?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the reviews I wrote up, I said, you could not hire a public relations firm to tell a story that was more pleasing and praising than this textbook has. I said, this textbook bears as much relationship to Islam as Gone with the Wind does to the history of slavery. I'm serious.
Yeah, because well,
there
that's
are some
about,
there are some
true
things about slavery and Gone with the Wind. Let's recognize that. It's just that any black man would say, whoa. There was a lot more to Gone with the Wind than that. So
yeah,
in the same way,
absolutely.
That's what I say. But, you know, the big problem here is this, is that we have historically as a nation completely ignored Islam other than romanticizing it through things like, 101 Nights. We have sort of romantic images of Islam or the Bedouin in the desert or something. But we know actually nothing about the doctrine of Islam. And that includes ministers, for instance. You would think that ministers would see Islam as a competitive religion and would be prepared to go head-to-head against it, but not so. But that's another whole issue. So what we have here is these textbooks are being brought into a society which has chosen to not know anything about Islam, and now then all of a sudden we're being told a lot about Islam, and it's only a half-truth. The point I'm getting to is this. There's not a lot of pushback. And mm-hmm. So that is the huge problem. Our only hope at this stage with these textbooks is that the kids will be as stupid about Islam as they are about American history, and so they won't remember any of these lies.
You know, I somehow doubt that, though, because bad things always stick with kids. So I'm not sure how that's going to play out.
Well, see, they don't tell us. If they would tell the story of how Muhammad issued orders on the proper way to rape captives, I think the kids would pay attention to that, but they don't tell them that.
No, of course not. And I guess the other thing that's amazing is some of the lesson plans that we're finding in the schools, and we're going to probably do this in a couple of weeks. I believe you looked at a World Studies assignment that was given to a student in the Nashville area. Yeah,
yes.
She didn't want to go on the field trip to a mosque, so she stayed behind. They gave her an assignment, which she ended up getting a zero on because she thought it was terribly biased. So I think you got a chance to look at that study, correct?
Yes, I
do.
Do
you remember that?
Yes, I do. And I raised this question, and actually I'm going to be raising this question in front of a Tennessee Senate hearing. My question to the senators is this. Since these textbooks only tell half of the truth, what happens to the student who brings in the other half? How will they be treated? Kathy, I spent 8 years in a university teaching. And so far as I'm concerned, if a student can come in and show something is wrong or incomplete with a textbook, that student is on the verge of getting an A+.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is an example of critical thought. But what we find instead in the Tennessee school system is that if a student brings in, for instance, let's just take what I've said so far about Muhammad. If they bring that into the classroom,
mm-hmm.
what I'm afraid of is that the student will receive an F, a reprimand, and basically be harmed in an academic sense, not in any physical sense,
right.
but in the sense of being ridiculed in front of the class or called in for a private audience by an authority figure who says, you can't say this kind of thing. But
mm-hmm.
it's true. Do we have, what I want to know is, in the Tennessee school system, is there room, I'm going to coin a word here, for an inconvenient truth about Islam?
Well, that's a good question. I think that we're finding the answers, unfortunately, the more that we expose what's happening in the schools and the textbooks, we're finding that the case is, the bias is certainly tilted towards the Islamic religion than the other religions. I think what's interesting, too, is that you gave a percentage or a page number. I think on the textbook that we're talking about, there were, I believe, an entire chapter. I forgot.
Well, what we see is if you read these textbooks, you would think that this nation was Morocco. or some other Islamic country, because in the first one I reviewed, they devoted more space to Islam than they did to Christianity. And you're like, well, wait a minute. What is your – you see, now we get to a critical point. How do we allot space in the textbooks to different religions? For instance, people aren't aware of this, but there are actually quite a few Buddhists in America. But since they're not a political thing like Islam, they're very quietly going about their way working in America. So how do we allot how much space to give to Jews, how much space to give to Muslims and Christians? But the point I'm making here is we need some objective standard. What I proposed as a standard was, why don't we allot the amount of material to religion as these people are as a portion of the population? Well, in that case, Islam should have gotten less than one page. Instead, I forgot,
wow.
I'm not looking at it. It was tens of pages. So we have here another thing, a lack of objectivity even in deciding what are we going to talk about. And if you're over the age of 30, you ought to go back and read some of it. You ought to see some of these new textbooks, which are not an accident. In the year 1990, in the state of California, the Muslim Brotherhood got together. And with the funding of a Pakistani billionaire by the name of Qureshi, they started the process of taking over the textbooks in America.
Mm-mm.
Now, one of the things I will tell you about the Muslim Brotherhood and political Islam in general, one morning I was in such despair, not only how good Islam was, but how bad we are in resisting it, and a colleague of mine, Andy Bostom, I called him out and I says, Andy, do you wake up some mornings and hate your own and admire the enemy? And he says, Bill, that's the downside of what we do. Because once you deal with the Muslim Brotherhood, you will have an enormous respect for them. They can do long-term planning. Remember, this is 23 years ago. They started planning
Amazing.
For the day that I would be reviewing these textbooks.
Wow, that's amazing.
Here's what I found out about the Muslim Brotherhood. If they plan,
well,
you can book it.
I'm going to need you to hold that thought for 1 second, Dr.
Okay.
Bill. All right, we're going to take a short break and come back with Dr. Bill Warner and more on the textbook issue and Islam. We'll be right back. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24/7, 365. There's nothing really like it that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get a 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did.
There are many sounds in your day-to-day life. There are sounds that wake you up. Sounds that make you smile. Sounds that energize you. And sounds that help you relax. But there are some sounds that can alert you to danger and can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you information about severe weather events, amber alerts, or other emergencies in your area. With critical information from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know, wherever you are. For more information, visit ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Chris, you're not acting like a grown-up in our relationship.
M2!
There's your comic book collection, the race car bed.
I'm young at heart, but I put money into my 401k every paycheck. I'm taking control over my financial life, and that feels pretty grown up to me.
Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
Are those footy pajamas?
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to conservativenationmedia.com. I'm your host, Kathy Hinners, on Daily Roll Call. If you'd like to be part of the show, and I suggest you should, call 718-305-7176, and we are now back with Dr. Warner. As we were saying, please continue, Dr. Warner.
Oh, my goodness, Kathy, what was I talking about? I was already reading some other emails while we were doing the ads.
Oh, boy, we're in trouble now. We were talking about the scales being tipped slightly towards the Islamic portion of textbooks.
Oh, yeah, in the textbooks, for sure. And, I know the other thing to pick up was that why we're in this position is that this is not an accident that we find that our textbooks are now biased very heavily in favor of Islam. And it was an effort that started 23 years ago. And it's an effort by the Muslim Brotherhood, and it is extraordinarily successful. There is another interesting thing about these textbooks. I remember I said that you learn to admire the Muslim Brotherhood as you work up against them. And one of the ways that you learn to admire them is how well they do their homework. And so this is just an example of that, about how far out they can plan. Here's the deal. They have a central committee. I forget now what it's called. I think it's the Islamic Committee on Education. And as a result, they have a coordinated attack on our textbook systems. And the reason it is coordinated is, and the reason you can tell it's there, is that every textbook you open pretty much sings from the same page. It's not like that you see a different Islam when you go to a different textbook. Now, this is brilliant, because remember I said our only hope with regards to Islam in our textbooks is that the students will be as stupid about Islam as they are about a lot of other subjects that they're not that interested
in.
Because here's the deal. When they tell you about Islam in the sixth grade, they're going to tell you exactly the same thing in the seventh grade. They're going to tell you exactly the same thing in the eighth grade and all the way up to your senior year until finally you go, well, gosh, I guess if they keep saying it over and over again, it must be true.
Yeah,
this is
that's
a brilliant public
true.
Relations campaign.
And we've talked about that before. They're a very methodical group,
yes.
The Muslim Brotherhood, that is. They are
yes.
a very patient group. You know, I know of no other people that have this patience. And you have told a story to me about after 9/11. If you could just, you know, tell that story about how you knew of no other group that was able to garner such support, you know, in such a short period of time immediately after 9/11 happened.
Well, they, and once again, they did this because all of, my first example of this is that 48 hours, this is an odd little fact in the sense of it's easily verifiable, and yet it's nobody's ever commented upon it, is that within 48 hours after 9/11, the phones begin to ring in churches all across America. And it was always the same message. Hi, my name is such and such. I'm a Muslim, and we would like to come to your church and give a talk on Islam, the peaceful religion.
Mm.
Okay. Now, I do not know of any military branch. I don't know of any law enforcement branch. I don't know of any Republican Party, certainly not the Republican Party, or Democrat Party, who would be capable of launching a nationwide public relations campaign 48 hours after an event like 9/11.
No,
okay.
No. And sadly enough, you're right. They are very good at what they do. And that's, you know, part of the platform, and I hope, you know, that we'll be discussing this a lot on this show, is exactly how they operate. And, you know, folks just don't necessarily want to believe that we have this sort of organization that is affecting our education, our law enforcement, our military, and every other entity in our society.
Well, as an example,
and
here in Tennessee, Islam now has a full-time lobbyist at the legislature. The Christians don't have one.
You're right. You're right. And that's an interesting point as well, because you know, not just probably the state of Tennessee has these organizations or these lobbyists, such as our well-known Remzia Suleiman. So, and I just had to throw her name out there. I'm sorry.
you know,
I do that whenever I, you know, yeah, she's very good at what she does. And I think the other thing that's interesting is the interfaith forums have become the new buzzword, you know, for them to be able to reach out to other religions. And I know that this is a sore spot with you in that the Christian leaders are taking the back seat. And
what
if you want to just
this?
Talk.
And here's the thing. I mentioned 9/11. Well, short months after 9/11, there was the first of the dialogues in Tennessee. By the way, we need to say something here. If people are listening somewhere else in the nation, they may say, Tennessee, well, you know, that's sort of, how much are they actually having to deal with Islam? Tennessee is at ground zero with the Muslim Brotherhood's campaign against America. We need to understand that. This is not some backwater town. We have Al Jazeera's here. Islam has a full-time representative in the legislature. But their stranglehold, or where their biggest point of entry, not stranglehold, their biggest point of entry into our culture. And this comes from the Muslim Brotherhood themselves. By the way, one of the things about the Muslims is all you have to do is listen to their chatter on the web. They are not at all shy.
No.
About telling what they're
no.
doing. Because here's what they've discovered. They can if they announced another bombing of New York City, no one would pay any attention to it. Nobody pays any attention to them except quirky people like you and me. But they'll tell what they're doing. And they have bragged that their biggest gains in American culture come from Christian ministers and Jewish rabbis. Anyway, back to the historic event. This was the within short months after 9/11, and we have our first dialogue in Tennessee. And what do we have? We have an imam from the Muslim Brotherhood Mosque. We have a rabbi, and we have a Baptist minister. Now, back in those days, you were actually allowed to ask questions. At the events now that they have, which are dialogues and stuff, you can't ask questions anymore because too many people like myself and some others showed up and asked questions that were, well, geez, the people holding the event didn't want to have difficult questions like that asked. So now then, mm-hmm. you don't get to ask difficult questions. If you go to one of these schmoozes, you get to fill out a card, and they will ask the question they want to. But anyway, so the question was asked. Rabbi, have you read the Quran? Well, no, but I intend to. Pastor, have you read the Quran? Oh, well, no, I haven't. Then we ask the imam. Imam, have you read the Old Testament? Oh, yes, I took a course in it. Imam, have you read the New Testament? Oh, yes, I've taken an entire course. Now, who did their homework?
Yes.
Well, the Muslim did
absolutely.
His homework. Now, here's the dreadful part. It just drives me up the wall. 13 years later, these idiots who mount a pulpit on Sunday and Saturday still haven't read anything about Islam. And so when they show up at these dialogues, they're even more supplicating and fall all over themselves over the Muslims than they were in the beginning. You show up at these things, you would think that all of that the rabbi and the minister were going to convert at the end of the thing. Because here's the deal. The Muslims show up to win, and the Christians and the Jews show up to tie. Now, I don't know if you ever played any sports or not, but we have a saying in the South, it ain't the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog. Well, the Christian dogs and the Jewish dogs don't have any fight in them at all, they're poodles. And they're in the presence of a wolf. And
tell me how you feel.
And here's the disaster. Is they feel good coming in second. They feel like, oh, they've
That's
done something.
That's a shame. That's
well,
a shame.
Well, in particular, if you're a Christian, I would think you'd want to see that Jesus went to dialogues with the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and, gosh, he showed up knowing more than anybody in the room, and then he used logic and wisdom to prevail. These ministers and rabbis today would be embarrassed to prevail because it would be a proof of racism or some other such. They're idiots.
Yeah.
But they're professionals.
Yeah.
And they're very kind
yeah.
and sweet idiots.
And they don't realize they would be the first to be beheaded, by the extremists.
Oh, that's not
going to
happen to them, Kathy, because they've met this nice Muslim. This is as far as their knowledge goes. 13 years later, they still haven't read anything. And they've met this nice Muslim, and he tells them that there's more mentions of Jesus in the Quran than there are Muhammad, which is true, except the Jesus they mention in the Quran is not the Jesus. And the reason I get so irritated at these pulpit idiots is that they sit there and smile and go, oh, that's nice. Jesus is in the Quran. No, you idiot. There's a creature named Isa in the Quran, and he ain't your Jesus. Although I don't know. Looking at these people, maybe it is their Jesus, Kathy. I don't even know. I sometimes ask my question, do the Christians even read the Bible anymore? I don't know.
Well, we're going to put you on hold for a second, and we're going to think about that as I go to a commercial break. I'll be right back with Dr. Bill Werner. There can be nothing more outrageous to an American than the idea of an innocent person being wrongfully convicted for a crime they didn't commit. But as they say, sunshine is the best disinfectant. We're proud to welcome A Just Cause with Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart to Tuesday nights on conservativenationmedia.com. Sam and Cliff take a hard look at what happens when the wheels of justice trample the rights of innocent Americans. These are real cases of real people who are actually innocent, but who were wrongfully convicted. Join us for A Just Cause, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
The It is with great pleasure that I welcome you to today's graduation ceremony. Students, when you hear the reason or reasons for your absences throughout the years, please exit the auditorium without your high school diploma. Once you've exited, remove your cap and gown and proceed into the unknown. Too tired. Family trip. Part-time job. Helping around the house. Sick day. Starting the holidays early. Just because.
Starting in the sixth grade, students who miss 18 days or more of school in a year for any reason will fall behind and risk not graduating high school. How many days of school has your child missed this year? Absences add up. Keep track at boostattendance.org today. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Whoa.
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him.
You can't even see the top of that thing!
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. I am your host, Kathy Henners, and we are finishing up, unfortunately, with Dr. Bill Werner. And Dr. Bill, as always, it has been a pleasure. But what I wanted to ask you...
Remember what I said last
time. I think probably I would love for you to come back because I think there's a lot of things that need to be told. I think there's a lot of things that need to be said. And do you have 1 second for a caller here?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Hi, you are on Daily Roll Call. Do you have a question?
Well, no, I was supposed to call in about 8:50 for my show tomorrow night, but I was listening to you.
Excellent.
And glad that you are here. I was actually listening on my phone during the most of the time that you've been on, and you've got an excellent show here. I've enjoyed listening to it.
Well, thank you, sir, and I'll be talking to you in about an hour or so.
Oh, well,
thank you.
I guess I did call maybe an hour early, didn't I?
Oh, that's fine. Hey, we love that you're listening, and I appreciate it. Thank you, and I'll be talking to you in a little bit.
Okay, bye.
By the way, Kathy?
Yes.
I should apologize to 5% of the ministers who are listening. I frequently say this. When I condemn the ministers and the churches, I'm only condemning 95% of them. There are actually some ministers out there and some churches out there who are playing heads-up ball. But 95% of them, nah.
Well, you know, I'm glad that you addressed that, though, because I think that they're sleeping, and I think that they need to be awakened. I mean, we've talked about the amount of Christians that are being, you know, massacred in other parts of the world. And
rights tragedy in our world today is the murder of Christians by Muslims. Let's be clear here. It is a jihad who wake up in the morning being Christian, and that is enough for them to be murdered. Nearly 100,000 Christians were murdered last year by Muslims. Mm-hmm. I find that outrageous.
Well, no one else apparently here does.
That's the other reason I rant and scream about preachers, and I say that 95% of them, I think, are morally corrupt. Because when you sit silently while Christians are being murdered every day around the world, I mean, what am I supposed to say about you? You're a nice guy?
Yeah.
No.
Well,
no.
Well, I mean, just today, I think it was in Iran, where 80 Christians were flogged because they drank the wine from the first, you know, from the Holy Communion. So, you know, this is something, again, that it's over there, but it's not here. It's not our problem here.
No, it is already started happening here. There are two Coptic Christians in New Jersey who were, last year or year before had their heads removed because they were trying to convert Muslims to Christianity. No. We need to understand that Islam is here. And what we see overseas in Europe and other places is now here as well. We merely have the thin end of the world's longest wedge set in place in America.
How long do you think, I mean, we see it in what we do, we see it all the time. I mean, I had no idea when I came to Tennessee that I was moving to what they call the buckle of the Bible Belt, and how embedded, you know, this issue is here. So I'm leaving. I'm just going to Texas. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, it just amazes me that in a state like this, it's so prevalent. But do you think that you look at the U.K., are they years ahead of us, or do you think that they're just a few years?
They're about 15 years ahead of us to 20 years ahead of us. Now, this negates the fact that as long as Obama is in power, Muslims more and more will be entering the United States. They get preferential treatment. A friend of mine was traveling in some of the stans, Uzbekistan and whatnot, and he's a Russian scholar. And he said his most frequent question from Muslims was this: is it true that if I can get myself declared as a refugee, I can come to America and live off the government? Let me say something. When you're in Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. So in the middle of nowhere, Muslims know that if you can just get yourself declared a refugee, which is a matter of filling out the right forms and lying about it, you can come to America not to work, but to get, they also said, in free medical care. Is it true that you'll get, basically, is it a free ride for me if I come to America? And Don has to say, well, yes, it is. Now you can come here. You can get it all
that's
for free.
That's sad. Yeah,
What is bad is that we're not outraged. Mm-hmm. We are the problem. Islam is not the problem. The way we treat Islam is an indication of what is wrong with our own moral fiber.
I think
Islam
they see
is
that.
Not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We are the
Don't
problem.
You think that too? That they're taking advantage of it because obviously we are
taking advantage of it.
You know,
but I mean that's
we're
like,
becoming.
We
Go
set
ahead.
Up a game. Why should we? If we put a pile of money on the sidewalk, should we be? Are we going to expect to find it when we come back? It's free money.
Right.
And so these people know it's free money. The Muslims, by the way, are very wired together because they view themselves as a nation unto themselves, the Ummah. And so when these people are talking in Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, they're not just making this stuff up. No. The Muslim grapevine is working away. And besides that, we have to understand this. From their standpoint, we owe them the money.
Yeah.
Because that is how the Quran sets up the proper social relationship between the Christian and the atheist and the Jew with Islam. You owe them money. It's not, and there's no generosity on your point. This is one of the things, by the way, that Christians, the idiots that they are because they refuse to study what's in front of them, think that they're making points when they give charity to Muslims. The Muslims do not see it as charity. They see it as their due.
Mm-hmm.
They are owed that money because the Christian is to be a dhimmi. And part of his dhimmitude, servitude to Islam, is to give Muslims money because he owes it to them. It's not a matter of generosity. That's not the way they see it. It's generosity on our side, but that's not the way they see it.
No, and I think what else is interesting, too, is that we seem to be becoming a godless nation. Just today, the Air Force has ruled to take God out of the oath. So I think that probably, you know, helps them, because if we don't believe in our God, then believing in their God will be much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, you're right. Yeah.
And by the way, how many Christians are going to be outraged enough to even talk to their congressman? By the way, let's go back to another issue here. How many Christians have gone to any of their elected officials at the state level, at the county level, at the federal level, and said, why are we supporting anything in any Muslim country as long as they're killing Christians? You would think that it would be easy for a minister to say to a congressman, why are we giving money to Egypt when they kill Christians? And yet I don't know of a minister who's ever done this, because it wouldn't occur to him. It wouldn't occur to him.
No. I think we have another question, maybe another question for you. Let me just see if this caller is. Hi, do you have a question for Dr. Bill?
Yes, I do. This is James from Clarksville, Tennessee. How are you, Bill?
Hey,
I'm good, James. How are you?
I'm great. I attended the Wednesday hearing by the commission, and I have a question for Dr. Bill. Where is the military in all of this? I have not heard a word or you guys say anything about the military. Our guys, our good guys, there are a lot of them still, but where are they on this? Aren't they ready? Have they not been doing their due diligence with their intelligence gathering? Where do they stand? Can you talk to that?
I really cannot, but I do know. I'm going to make a flat statement here. I'm a student of history, although I'm a scientist and engineer. It appears to me that our time in history, we've never had better foot soldiers and worse flag rank officers. By flag
good
rank,
point,
I mean those are generals.
I know what you mean. I have to agree with you there.
Our flag rank officers don't seem to have any. Well, first off, they're in a peculiar position in that they're supposed to be subordinate to the civilian part of the government.
Right.
But I'll say this. What flag rank officer has resigned over anything that's happened under the Obama administration?
Not a one.
What? And by the way, this has happened before in our history, where generals resign over what they see as policy. I do not know of a resignation. Now, of course, I'm not privy to anything that goes on in the Pentagon. Or what little bit I am, my sources have been, by the way, cut off at the Pentagon, and they've been fired, and because they spoke out about Islam. And by the way, this happened under George Bush. George Bush was the first one who started firing people out of the military who knew something about Sharia law and political Islam. This is the real tragedy of the state we find ourselves in, is that the Republicans are about as bad as the Democrats.
I agree with that as well.
Now, when I say Republican, I'm not including conservatives. I draw a distinction between a conservative and a Republican.
Absolutely. It's appalling to me to see how the rhinos, if you will, are acting. I mean, they may as well just go on the left side of things and stay with the Dems.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I see it.
But I do not know. The pushback that I do know in the military is from retired officers and at the lower level, at the lower rank. I'm going to make another broad statement. It appears to me that tough mental attitude ceases after lieutenant colonel.
I agree with that,
James. James, I'm going to have to end your call here. I thank you for calling in. Stay tuned down the road, and thanks again for calling in. Have a good night.
I'm continuing.
That was great. That was very interesting.
Well, Kathy,
so,
at least you'll say this: Bill ain't shy.
No, not at all. And I tell you what, that is why I have absolutely loved having you on the show.
No pussyfooting around here. Tell us how you feel, Bill.
I think that, really. Well, that's why I had you on. So I think the big thing is I think that we need at some point to have you come back and really get into, you know, what Islam is and how,
sure.
You know, there's people need to know. People need to know what's happening here. And I want to thank you for being my first guest. You are
well,
very special.
And,
yeah, me too. And so we're going to invite you back anytime you want to come on. Yeah, please do. And we'll talk to you again.
Thanks a lot, Kathy. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Bill. All right. We will be right back. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with Lisa Moore. And talk some more about textbooks and Islam.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy
backsplash. I want to be a bike that races around the
when
country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest
when I
trail.
Grow up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a...
I want to
be
a...
I want
to
be
I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to ConservativeNationMedia.com. This is Daily Roll Call with Kathy Henners. To be part of our show, dial in at 718-305-7176. That was a very good first hour. I hope for those of you that have never heard Dr. Bill speak before, perhaps you'll look into seeing him when he does come to town to speak. He is a... just a fountain of information for us on Islam. And in the same token, he's not a hater. You know, he has been labeled certain things, as we all have in this business. But he is extremely knowledgeable about it. And I think that he brings a lot to the table when he talks about the two different sides of Islam. So we will be having Dr. Warner back again. And again, I just appreciate him. He's a lot of fun to talk to. He's a lot of fun to work with. And so I look forward to that again. Coming up in a minute is going to be our second guest for our second hour, Lisa Moore. Lisa has led the charge along with a group of true patriots in exposing exactly what bias and misinformation these textbooks have had in them throughout the school districts. She is a great person, a good person to know, and very, very adamant about digging to the bottom of things. She will get to the root of things, and you'll know when you hear her speak that she is not going to give up. So good for her. But first, there comes a time when good things have to give way to great things. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing like a Texas Longhorn, which is why Michael B. Smith now has his own show. Check out Soldier of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. But don't be worried. He's the same Michael B. you've come to know and love, and you'll hear even more great interviews and awesome conservative commentary from our very own main man, Michael B. Smith, on Soldier of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Okay, let's welcome Lisa Moore. Lisa also is kind of the warrior of textbooks, is what I like to call her. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Hi, Kathy. I'm great. I have enjoyed listening to your first show so far.
Well, thank you. You can't miss with Dr. Bill. I mean, you've heard
Dr.
Absolutely. Bill before.
I'm just not sure how I feel about following up on him, but that's okay. I'll do my best.
Hey, I know that. I mean, he is a tough act to follow. I've had to follow him on several occasions, but you know what? You are great as well, and I am really very proud to know you, because you have taken a subject that is brutally difficult to deal with, and you have just decided that this is something you need to do. So I guess my first question to you is, how did you become concerned with these textbooks? How did this all begin with you?
Well, and good question, and I guess that would be a good place to start, Kathy. I actually have spent the last several years, as you know, becoming a student of the concerns about Islam, and especially political Islam and the indoctrination and things that are happening in our country. And so already being somewhat educated about it, this really all got started for me with the textbooks last September, so it's been a little over a year ago. I have a son who was 12 years old, 11 years old at the time. He came home with his world history textbook from the sixth grade, his first year of middle school. And I was working when he got home from school that day. He showed the book to his dad, and he said, "Dad, I think you need to look at this. I think we need to show this book to Mom." And the next thing his dad saw was him opening the textbook to these multitude of pages on Islam. Now, I have to kind of understand and put this in perspective. My 12-year-old is a little bit unique in that he probably knows more about political Islam than most grown-ups. And he recognized immediately when he started leafing through this textbook that something was wrong.
Oh,
so
boy.
For me, that's what really started it. I was already very much aware, Kathy, that there was a concern that was starting to creep into the textbooks in the schools. And I guess it didn't hit me until he actually walked in and that book was in our home. And I saw what was going on, and I knew and was convicted from that moment that I had to do something about it.
But there were other concerns, too. I mean, it wasn't just the textbook. There were some other things happening in the school as well, right?
Well, there were, and yeah, and that came a little bit later on. Started diving into the textbook and had some Patriot friends here locally that started looking at it with me as well, and we decided that we needed to take it actually to Dr. Bill to look at. So Bill, of course, as you know, is one of my mentors and teachers as well, and he was kind enough to review the book for us. And while he was in the process of doing that and finishing up his report, my son comes home another day from school and says, "Oh, by the way, Mom, we're studying world religions this week, and I have some handouts from my class I want to show you." And at that point, I had been poring through the textbook probably for about a month, and he pulled these handouts out of his backpack, and Kathy, I literally had to sit down and catch my breath. There were supplemental curriculum materials that he had brought home from his world history class, the week of world religion studies, that just absolutely blew my mind. So I'm assuming you want me to tell you about those?
Yeah, I think those that was something that you shared with me very early on when we first met. And, you know, I think that was the very beginning for me exposing what was happening in the schools.
Right.
Because when I saw that, that was just the tip of the iceberg, and I think we're learning that now. But, yeah, why don't you tell everyone about what that really was. What were those papers? What was it?
Okay. Well, and first of all, the week they actually did, his class spent a week on the, quote, world religions during the World History Social Studies for that year. And first of all, it's important to note that after he got done with that week and we went back and looked through his notes, that of that week of world religions, they spent 3 days, 2.5 maybe, talking about Islam and teaching about Islam. Then there was one day on Christianity and Judaism, and one day that was devoted basically to all the rest. And these handouts, there were 7 of them, if I remember correctly. 4 of the 7 were about Islam. 2 of them were about Christianity, and 1 of them was about Judaism. And what disturbed me, well, there are a lot of things, of course, that disturbed me about those handouts, but 2 of them were nothing but propaganda, whitewash, rosy story about the life of Muhammad. And, of course, having been educated and read a great deal and understood what the life of Muhammad really was, it was not at all an accurate depiction. Of course, if you did an accurate depiction of the life of Muhammad in a child's classroom, it wouldn't be suitable for a sixth-grade classroom. So, you know, my feeling would be is, okay, if we can't tell the truth, then just don't put it in there. But certainly don't tell them lies and whitewash it. One of the handouts was a timeline that they had to do of Muhammad's in the growth of Islam. And then the other handout was a huge, you know, an 8.5 by 11 page of the 5 pillars of Islam, in which the kids had to actually cut out the pieces that matched up with the particular pillar as far as what that pillar was. And, of course, as you and I both know, there's really more than 5 pillars. You know, there's that 6th pillar that they don't want us to talk about or that they don't want to put in the textbooks that's called jihad. But that's another story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after I saw those handouts, it just escalated it, obviously, as far as our level of concern.
You're right. The 6th pillar is something that they don't like to speak about, but yet they will write about it in certain texts. And as Dr. Bill had said, the textbooks don't tell the whole truth. So the handout that Jacob had, you know, about Muhammad, it certainly wasn't the Mecca or the Medina years. It must have been his very peaceful years when he first started out. So
I think they wanted us to think
that
it was all of them and that was just how he lived his life. And, again, going back to the whole peaceful religion theory.
Where did those handouts come from? Did we ever figure that out?
We did, and actually that was one of the things, as you know, after we finished and Bill was kind enough to do a report for us on the textbook, I took the textbook and the handouts to a school board meeting here in Rutherford County. And again, I wanted to kind of note something that was real important, I think, that you and Bill touched on earlier, and that is for people that might be listening to your show from other areas of the country, how critical it is for them to understand that this isn't just going on in Tennessee. It's not just going on in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, or Franklin, Tennessee. It is all over the country. But back to your question, yeah, I took them to the school board, and that was one of the things that, I guess if you could say demands or requests that I made when I presented all of this to our local school board was, where did these handouts come from? How did these things possibly get into my child's classroom? They're not history, they're indoctrination, and they're also full of lies, and they're not acceptable. So that was a challenge that I put back to the school board, and that the handouts were actually something that I did get an answer back on. I was later down the road able to have a meeting with our director of schools and the director of curriculum, and it turns out, at least according to the answer that I got, Kathy, they said that my son's teacher, that this was an isolated incident, that she had pulled these handouts off of a website. And so, and they did give me the website, and it turned out to be a website that was linked to some homeschooling parents organization, which, hey, that's
okay.
Great.
Yeah, but I think we remember that, yeah.
Yeah, as I dug deeper, when you went to this homeschool mom site that started the whole series of them, where she had gotten her information from was a website in Britain. And we all know what's happening in Britain.
Yes. Absolutely. Now, before we continue on, I just got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Lisa Moore. I'll be right back.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving, a public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Peek-a-boo, peek-a-boo, smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby, I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No big, joyful smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We are back on conservativemedianation.com. This is Daily Roll Call with your host, Kathy Hinners. And we have with us Lisa Moore, one of our textbook warriors and parents from a county here in Tennessee. Lisa, thank you for holding on. And, you know, I remember when I first met you, it was at a 9/11 event that I had just spoken at, and you had your son with you. And I remember just thinking that our children have no idea, you know, what is in store for them in their future. And I was so proud to see that a child even wanted to be there, and it certainly appeared that he wanted to be there. He was, you know, very forthright with me. He's a great kid. But I think that the Islamists that we're dealing with, they know that our children are our future. And I truly believe that this is why this is happening, which is really, really sad, but yet they are so far advanced, as Dr. Bill and I were talking about. They are very patient people, but unfortunately our schools and our school boards are not on the same page. And I think you could probably speak to that about your concerns to the school board in Rutherford County, Tennessee. I know that you have such a loving relationship with them. Where are we at now with the school board in reference to that issue?
Well, as far as where we are with the local school board, Kathy, in reference to that original textbook that we brought to their attention, of course, as you know, there was a lot of talk and a lot of run around and a lot of stalling and an awful lot of unreturned phone calls and letters throughout the whole process. But at the end of the day, they basically said to us, look, we're not going to pull this textbook. We don't think it's that bad. And our teachers are very careful about the way they teach their curriculum anyway, which was really an answer to that his teacher had brought these handouts into his class. But anyway, they basically said no, they weren't going to pull it. And they essentially, Kathy, started passing the buck, I guess would be the best way I could put it, pushing us back to the state and saying, look, we get the textbooks handed to us by the state. We don't have any control over it. I mean, there were a couple of board members that actually used those words, we don't have any control over it, which turns out not to be true. So that's very important to kind of keep that in mind. And they kept saying, look, the social studies books in Tennessee are being rebid by all the publishers to go into the classrooms in the 14-15 school year. So what you need to do, and of course basically they were saying what you need to do is get out of our boardroom and leave us alone, but what you need to do, Lisa and company, is you need to go to the state and you need to get involved in the process for reviewing the new books. And that way you can review them and you can be sure that those books don't get into our system. So at that juncture, knowing that we were basically fighting a losing battle, at least as far as that particular book was concerned, that is precisely what we did. We turned our attentions to the state.
And I'd like to get back to that, but I think I want to let our listeners know, too, what was the offensive part? I can't recall what it is. I don't remember if it was something about a freedom fighter or if it was about the line where if a Palestinian blew himself up. Which one was it? Do you remember offhand, Lisa?
There was a section in a textbook, and that was actually the one they found in Williamson County. However, called The Cultural Landscapes. It was a Pearson book. It was actually a high school level book. But what's important to note is that book was also in our system here in Rutherford County. We just hadn't stumbled across that one yet because none of us had a high schooler. But that was a paragraph in a Pearson geography, human geography book that talked about a suicide bomber coming into a restaurant and blowing up all these Israeli teenagers. And it was just it was blatantly anti-Semitic, which, of course, to me, as you know, is a bit of a personal offense also.
Sure.
And so that was in another book. Now, the particulars of my son's book was really just all the whitewashing that it did, the fact that it didn't tell the real truth about, you know, the violence of the Islamic rise to power, and the fact that it had, that the page numbers and the word counts outweighed anything that was in that book related to the other religions. I mean, it's just, you know, to me that's extremely telling in itself. You've got 100 pages about Islam and 20 about Christianity. You've got a problem.
Absolutely. And that is pretty much across the board. But have you heard from other parents in any other state? Has anybody reached out to you, you know, to ask you, well, if it's happening in your state, it's got to be happening in ours. I mean, we've got books from California that we know have this type of bias in it. Have you heard from any other parents anywhere?
Oh, we have. And since we really started delving into and started the review process of all the new ones that were being submitted, word kind of got out, and through some of the different groups that we work with, we have actually, just in the past few weeks, I've had probably over 300 emails that have come in from concerned citizens, parents, grandparents, patriots, not just from the state of Tennessee, but all over the country. And we weren't the first state, obviously, to uncover these issues with the textbooks. I mean, they were already well on that track in Texas and in California and also in Florida. But we did start getting phone calls from all over and emails from all over the country saying, what are you doing? We're concerned. You know, what can we do in our state?
That's great to hear. So at some point, you know, I'll put your information on the website so that, you know, you can get more than 300 emails a day. I think that is probably because so many parents don't know what to do. So with us here in Tennessee kind of laying a foundation for them, you know, it might be helpful if they reach out to someone like yourself that has already done this work and who has already been through the textbooks, you know, to a point here and realize what's going on. So I guess I'm curious, too, about, I know you spent your summer at MTSU library. I know you didn't even get a tan this year, so I know where you were this summer.
Well,
and
Kathy, actually, I spent more time at the MTSU library this summer than I did the 4 years I was in college there, so that tells you something.
Did you get your degree from them this year? I know it was a very arduous process. I know that you and Jackie Archer and several other Patriots that worked on this, mm-hmm. You took time away from your family and friends to do this. So can you just tell me, though, what that process was like? I mean, how many you went through? And I guess also what I understand is that you did not have they would not let you remove the textbooks, obviously, from the library. So how long did this process take you to do this?
Well, it would have taken us a lot longer, except we were only given a very short window of time, Kathy, for what they call the public comment period. And this process all relates to the state process, again, that the local guys pushed us back to, where the social studies books were being submitted by the publishers. And when I say social studies, in Tennessee that means history, your world history, your American history, your geography. It also includes psychology books, economic books, and all of your, you know, politics and civics books as well. And the way the process works, just very simply, because I know we don't have a lot of time, but the state puts out at a certain time, they put out a bid for publishers to bid the books. And one of the difficult things this year was that, you know, the books had to meet these state standards that were established that they kept telling us weren't related to Common Core, but we're pretty sure now that they were, but that's another mm-hmm. topic for another day. And the state continued to run late and continued to postpone and miss deadlines on getting those standards written. And we kept calling and saying, when are the books going to be ready for us to look at? We're getting the runaround, no answers. So we showed up at one of the state commission meetings back in June. And it was amazing because they were absolutely stunned when about 15 of us walked into the room and sat down to listen to their commission meeting. We were actually very well received. We heard from the commissioners after the meeting and said to us, look, this is the first time we've actually ever had public show up at one of our meetings.
Oh, wow.
But they were very welcoming, and we shared some of our concerns with them, talked with them after the meeting. They said, look, we're more than happy to have you involved in the process. You know, here's what's going to happen. They gave us the timeline. And we find out that we basically have, it was really probably not much more, I think, than about 6 or 7 weeks to review the textbooks once they got put on the shelves at the library. And, yes, what
wow.
happened, there were over, there were 74 books, I believe, in total that
oh
wound
my
up being
gosh.
Submitted. Well, it sounds like a lot, but what's really bad about this is we even found out from the librarian at MTSU that there should have been hundreds more. But what happened, Kathy, was because the state continued to run late on getting the standards published, the publishers, it eliminated a lot of the smaller publishers from even being able to bid the books because they just don't have the massive systems and obviously the massive dollars to fund those kind of projects like the Pearsons and the Bedford, mm-hmm. Freeman, and Worse, who, for what it's worth, were two of the absolute worst of the books that we looked at. And the big guys got wound up getting to play in the game because nobody else could even afford the entry fee was kind of the way I put it. These smaller guys were kept from it because the timeline and also because the state charged a $1,000 bond for every book that they bid, whether their books got
wow.
picked or not. So, and what happens for the public review period is they put these books, literally the paper, you know, the books, hard books, on the shelves in several of the university libraries across the state. You could not take the books out of the library. You couldn't check them out, take them home. You weren't allowed to make copies. You weren't allowed to do scans. So, yes, in the beginning, we literally had to physically go to the library and sit and read those books. I read more textbooks in a month than I did, again, probably all my years of school. But finally,
I'm
we
sure.
got Yeah, we filed a lot of complaints and concerns and continued to stir it up with the state. And finally, about halfway through the process, they did put some of the publishers online for us, where we were able to start reviewing online. And that helped us open up to more reviewers that were able to come help us because they weren't able to get to the library. So, but yeah, we wound up reviewing the majority of these 74 books by at least one of our reviewers.
In a very comfortable library. Now, when we come back, I have to take a short break.
Okay.
When we come back, though, I would like to hear how the commission meeting went, and then after that, you know, where do we go from here? So
okay.
We will take a quick break, and we will be back with Lisa Moore.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Okay, let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country, your family, unable to get to the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, click on Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution where America always wins. And we are back now with Lisa Moore to finish up this hour. Lisa, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here, Kathy. I had to call back in, but I'm back.
I know, I panicked.
sorry about
okay.
that. The call just disappeared.
We've got a few minutes before we have to take a small break, but I wanted you to tell real quickly what happened to the commission. You've worked this hard. You've brought them to the commission, and what happened?
Well, there's been 4 commission meetings altogether that we attended since the public review period. The first one was the publisher hearing. You want to hear about the last 2? You want me to tell the whole thing here? Do we have time?
we might have a few minutes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, real quickly, the first hearing that was held was what they call the publisher hearing, which is when the publishers come in to kind of do their dog and pony show for the commission, but they also have to listen to or respond to any concerns that were submitted to them from the teachers. In other words, the teacher committee that did the review of the textbooks. And they had also, before they came into that hearing, had received all these hundreds of public comment concern forms that many of us had filed with them. That it was so interesting because the publishers got up and they spoke to the commission. They didn't even want to make eye contact with us. They spoke to the teachers' concerns, which were, in my opinion, ridiculous, piddly little things like, oh, well, your website didn't work well, or your link to the U.S. History Channel didn't work well. Not a thing, Kathy, nothing from any of these teachers about the bias or the indoctrination. I mean, the American history books are terrible, too. Kathy, they're downright anti-American. It's awful. And none of those teachers, none of them, spoke to any of those issues. So the publishers wouldn't – we spoke before the publisher hearing, so they heard our concerns. There were five or six of us, and we very specifically addressed those publishers and told them, you know, how ashamed we would be that those books would even go into our children's classrooms. So anyway, they had those publisher hearings. They didn't answer any of our questions. Then the next hearing was for them, for the commission, to vote on the list of books, whether or not to accept them. And that was a real pivotal meeting. It was on October the 7th. And again, a number of us showed up. There were five of us that spoke in the public presentation period before the meeting to the commissioners. There were some terrific presentations made to them. We reiterated the concerns in a very, very passionate but very concise manner. We pointed out to them that on the list of reviewers that we had, you know, we had two PhDs, four master's degrees, we had a constitutional attorney. So we wanted to make sure that they understood that this wasn't just some ragtag band of, you know, parents that were on a roll to undertake or overtake the publishers or put them out of business.
Sure.
But some of them should be. And after they heard all of our impassioned pleas, I guess, if you will, it was time to take a vote. And the director of the commission asked for a motion to approve the books of the list of books. And we were all, of course, sitting there holding our collective breath. And, Kathy, there was not a sound. He called for a motion, not a sound. It was the most beautiful silence I've ever heard in my life. And, of course, I realized at that moment it was like one of those, you know, you just want to break out in song moments that, oh, my gosh, these commissioners really do get it. They really do care about our kids. And so we're sitting there holding our breath, and you could tell the director of the commission was getting really nervous, called for another motion. Do I have a motion to approve the list of social studies books? Silence.
Oh, wow.
They wound up none of the commissioners that were present at that meeting, and it's important to note that at all these commission meetings, not all of them ever showed up for all of these meetings. They never had a full, complete commission at any of these meetings, which is pretty sad in itself. But when it came time to vote, they wouldn't vote on them. They turned them down, the entire list, and we were just obviously ecstatic. It's like, okay, they heard us. And one of the pleas that we'd made to them was, hey, look, at least just freeze the process. Let's stop it. Let's take time to go back and look and explore the possibility that there are other better textbooks out there. And so their commissioner of education didn't show up for this meeting like he hasn't to any of the others. But the director of curriculum was there, who essentially is really these folks' boss, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it. And she came unglued. And I've heard this lady speak several times. She's always very composed, well-spoken, and she absolutely, it rattled her to the core. And out of procedure for meetings, what is it, Robert's Rules of Orders, she jumped up from her chair, ran to the podium, and started scolding, basically, the commission. What do you think you're doing? This was your process. How could you not approve these books? And they all just sat there and said, we're not going to approve them. And so then, of course, this was so such unfounded or uncharted water for all of them that they're kind of sitting around looking at each other like, what are we going to do now? And so at the end of the meeting, what they decided to do was call an emergency meeting they scheduled it for 2 weeks out to give the commissioners, quote, time to really go back and look over our reviews and everything in a little more detail, and then to come back, which they did this past Wednesday, to have another hearing to see what happened then.
All right, and we have a couple minutes. So what happened after the victory, after everyone celebrated a victory because it was about the kids and they did make
right.
the right decision, what happened on Wednesday?
Yeah, the victory was huge, but we realized it wasn't over. I mean, we knew just from the example that the curriculum director said in that meeting that they were in for a really, really hard time. And no doubt they were going to get pressure. Well, we went into the meeting on Wednesday. First of all, they changed the venue on us probably just a few days before the meeting. We thought it was on one location, and then all of a sudden we found out it was at the other. Now, was that deliberate? I don't know, but it wasn't very acceptable. And the change of venue they changed it to was a smaller room, smaller location. And we also got told that we were not going to be allowed, or they weren't going to grant a public comment period. In other words, we couldn't come to that meeting and speak. We could come and listen, but we weren't going to be allowed to speak. And so at that juncture, quite frankly, it didn't bother me that much other than the root of it, because we'd pretty much already said everything we needed to say to them. And they'd seen our reviews on these books, and they'd already spoken to it. Well, we get there on Wednesday, and actually one of the commissioners got up and said, I want to speak before any vote comes up. He said, I just want to tell the publishers of these books that I'm appalled at their lack of integrity. He said these books are awful. I don't remember the exact word he used, but he really, really chastised them about the quality of the books and said, I am not going to vote for any of these books to go into any of our Tennessee children's classrooms. And publishers, for those of you that are here in the room, I don't know how you're going to put your head on the pillow at night and sleep with these books that you've presented to us. So, very encouraging. It's like, all right. And they just went on. Well, the next thing we knew, the chairman of the commission got up to speak. And I knew immediately where it was headed, because the first thing he said was, well, what everybody in this room needs to understand is the only thing that this commission is responsible for is to review these textbooks to ensure they meet the state standards. It is not our responsibility to review them for content or bias.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that time you could have dropped a pin.
Not their responsibility. Yeah.
Not their responsibility, and that was going to be the responsibility of the local school systems, and that if the books were approved, if there were still concerns, that we would just have to take it back to our local school districts.
That's
so
disgusting. Disgusting.
Yeah, disgusting would be, for me, an understatement.
Yeah, that's, it turned from being about the children to apparently being about someone else's agenda. That's just really, unacceptable. On that happy note, I just have to take a quick break, and I'll be right back with Lisa Moore. So after some serious thought, you've come to the conclusion that you don't believe the liberal media. Neither do we. For proof of that, Robert Garding's New Wise Conservatism show is on conservativenationmedia.com every Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. Robert has always had a big internet following, so listen Saturdays and you'll find out why. Thousands love his brand of New Wise Conservatism, and you will too. The New Wise Conservatism Show with Robert Garding, Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. And we'll have more with Robert in just a few minutes. He'll be joining us to give us an introduction to his show as well. We're back for the last few minutes with Lisa. Lisa, we have about 2-3 minutes. If you can wrap this up, where do we go now?
Well, good question.
Happened
well, what wound up happening was they one of the commissioners decided to make a motion to approve the books and take one of them out, which was a psychology book that was just terribly inappropriate, but obviously didn't have anything to do with the history books. So it was like they offered up a sacrifice. And so he puts out a motion to reject this one psychology book and approve the remaining list. They voted on it. There were 5 commissioners there, which was enough to make a quorum, and the vote was 3-2 to approve the list of the books. So terribly disappointing that, well, anyway, we can get into that more maybe later on another show as far as why we think this happened. But where we go from here, Kathy, again, they pushed us straight back to our local school districts. And our local school districts keep pushing us back to them and saying that they don't think they can do that. It's in the statutes that they can pick their own books. But anyway, there will be, there are actually going to be, we have a senator here in the state of Tennessee who has taken a very active concern about Common Core and about the textbooks and the issues with education, and that's Senator Dolores Gresham. And she has called and scheduled for some special hearings on the textbooks. They will be held Monday and Tuesday, November 4th and 5th. And we're hopeful that we're all going to get an opportunity to testify at these hearings. And at this point, of course, my hope would be that they're going to hear all the evidence from what we found in these textbooks and that the legislature will step forward and make the decision to freeze the process until it can be fixed. But if that doesn't happen, then we're left having to go back to every individual school district in the state of Tennessee and try to convince our school boards that they need to purchase other books.
And, you know, we know, and you certainly know, that you know, some of the local school boards are not on the same page. They, again, you know, it isn't about the children. It's about the money in the pocket is always the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And it's really unfortunate. It's unfortunate that after all the work that was done, that you and your team, the textbook warriors, did all this work. And but, you know, I guess we can't give up. And I'm sure you are not giving up. Knowing you,
not.
I'm sure you're not. But, you know, I'd like to hear more, and I'm sorry that we're running out of time, but I would like to hear more about how the local school board, with some of your friends and mine that are on that school board, and I'm being facetious there, you know, I'd like to hear what happened at this past meeting and how, you know, the ball keeps going back responsibility for these horrendous, disgusting textbooks. So I guess that means I'm going to have you back if you'll come back.
Oh, it would be my pleasure, Kathy. Thank you. If we can, whatever we can do to get the word out, again, to start waking parents up, whether it's here in Tennessee or anywhere in this country, it's just too important.
You're right, Lisa. And I think that we'll probably do, you know, quite a few shows, if you'll agree to that, and maybe bring some of these textbooks, you know, some of the paragraphs that are very offensive, some of the sections that are, you know, completely biased into this, you know, into the realm here, so that people can hear actually what their kids are learning and what's being said. So I really thank you so much for being my second guest and being a great one at that. And, you know, I do look forward to being able to talk to you again on our show. And, Lisa, thank you so much for everything that you've done. You're truly a patriot. You truly care about the kids, and everyone appreciates that. So thank you for being my guest.
Well, Kathy, it was my privilege, and I thank you. So hopefully we'll get to talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Lisa Moore from Rutherford County here in Tennessee talking about our textbooks. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay. Then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect, Compete, and the Ad Council.
Been looking for an online gathering place, you know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative, you gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
To conservativenationmedia.com. This is Daily Roll Call with your host, Kathy Henners. And I do believe I have Robert back on the line with me. Robert is going to be debuting his new show, The New Wise Conservatism, I think tomorrow. Hi, Robert. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm on time this time. But I've been doing my show actually since 2007, and I've been with Conservative Nation Media since, I think, March or something like that.
Oh, boy.
But that's okay. But I've enjoyed listening to your show tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And you've had some great guests, and you asked some great questions, too. We've got a great addition to the family of Conservative Nation Media with you. So.
Well, I thank you for that. I thank you for the kind words, and I will be listening in. This all is new to me. The Blog Talk Radio and certainly Conservative Nation Media is new to me. I have been listening on Mondays to Dave Vance's show, but I will be tuning in to listen to yours tomorrow. It's a great format, and so you have been around for quite some time. What is your show?
Yes,
what do you talk about?
Well, I essentially have always talked about our government and what they are doing wrong. And when I first started out, I had a lot of troubles finding enough to cover a show. But it seems like today what they're doing is they're giving us so darn much stuff that I'm having to leave out half the things that they do because I don't have the time to do it.
That's nice to hear. Unfortunately,
sadly, we get people, though, who one of the guys that I work with, who I've been touting that the Obamacare is not really a law because it was never passed through the House. And one of the guys that I work with says, oh, that doesn't have to be. All it has to do is pass two of the three branches.
Oh,
and
geez.
No, it doesn't. It has to go through the House, has to be funded through the House. And if you're not funded, then it's not, it can't work as a law. Well, it's the only thing that's ever happened in the House is defunding. So, but they're giving us a whole bunch of things to talk about on the show. Debbie Wasserman Schultz this week said that the conservatives out here can just keep quiet because she doesn't work for them. Oh, yes, she does, and I'm going to let her know about that tomorrow. Too bad she won't be listening.
She is a show in herself. So, unfortunately, the environment today is allowing for this type of format to grow. Because there is so many disgruntled people because of what is going on. I mean, it's crazy, the bad things that are happening. I guess I never figured I'd be around to see the country in such a dire strait. I think the thing today that got me going was the removal of God from the oath in the Air Force. So, you know, what's next? You know, what's next? It's really becoming a lawless, godless nation. And I don't know where we're headed, but I'm sure you have a lot of really interesting callers on both sides, you know, that call in. And you get any good arguments?
Well, actually, I really don't. I think most of the people who listen to my show, a lot of them listen when I'm not on the air. You know, they listen to the archive list of things. So I don't get many calls. But I've gotten, I got one from Great Britain a couple weeks ago. And,
oh, neat.
So that was pretty cool.
What are they comparing, you know, what's happening there to here?
Essentially he was just saying that we need to wake up because they're seeing it in England. And he says the American people are too close to it. But he says we need to wake up to what's going on in our country or we're going to lose it.
Yeah, and that's so sad to hear that. But, you know, even in the subjects that I'm speaking about, you know, we certainly have or are losing that battle as well. So, you know, if other countries can see this, you know, why can't we? But yet, you know, our government isn't helping in the matter whatsoever. So, you know, I guess there's not a whole lot that we can do with that. But it's very discouraging. And the only thing we can do, I guess, is just keep talking and keep letting people be aware of what's happening. So, but, you know, after a while, you just feel like a dead record. And you just hope if you can get one person, one new person to listen to you and open their eyes, but at what point, you know, does it matter if we're awake anymore? I mean, what point is it too late?
I think what's going on now is really amazing because the people are awake. They know what's going on and they're speaking. It's the government that's not listening. And that's going to stop as soon as the people realize they need to oust these people and get them out of there so they can get our country back.
I can only hope so. I don't know what's going to happen in you know, the next election. I don't know. I mean, this president has made his own rules pretty much, executive orders everywhere. So, you know, will it be where he just doesn't leave office or, you know, I don't know. I don't know where we're headed in that respect, but it's a very trying time for sure. But I'm not so sure that he's going to give up so easily. Either that or Hillary's going to get in.
I don't think he will either. Yeah, I don't think he will either because I can see him even maybe trying for a third term. I've heard people talk about that, and I'm not sure if that'll happen. But I can see him giving it some thought.
Absolutely. You know, there's no reason for him, so he feels, to leave. I mean, you know, he thinks he's doing such a fine job, but yet, you know, the moral status of the country and the economic, I mean, everything is just collapsing. And, you know, you usually look to your leaders in government to help you out with that. But, you know, he's on a golf course somewhere or, you know, spying on someone or listening to somebody's telephone conversation. So I don't know. I don't know where we're headed, Robert, but I think it's pretty trying, for me anyway. And I'd hate to be a small kid at this point. You know, it's a joke. Obamacare certainly is a joke. So, I bet you're hearing a lot of that on your show, right? About Obamacare.
Yeah, I cover that pretty good. I found a quote that was from Thomas Jefferson that I'm going to use in my show tomorrow. But it's about how if you've got an unjust law, it is our right to not follow it, and it is our duty as citizens to not follow it. So
you're right.
It's something that people need to start thinking about because Obamacare is a very unjust law because it was unjustly pushed upon us.
Yes, it was. I agree.
I have enjoyed listening to your show and glad that you're with us, and I'll let you get back to the show because it's almost over. So.
All right. Well, thank you, and I'll be listening to you. Thank you, Robert.
And I'll see everybody at 4 o'clock tomorrow. Bye.
Okay, going to wrap up our first show of Daily Roll Call here on conservativenationmedia.com. I hope you'll join us next Friday when we're going to have a few other guests. Kind of a surprise, I guess. So stay tuned next week, and thanks for joining us.